Hi there, I'm Jason McMullen.
And I'm Kate Ariano. Welcome to Words Aloud.
We love books. We love stories, poems, memoirs, narratives, and any kind of written or spoken word that moves us.
That's why we created Words Aloud, a space for us to invite writers of all kinds to share their pieces that we like.
Come get lost in words. You're with friends here.
Welcome back, friends, to Words Aloud. Allison Detterman is back joining us from the WHUS studio up in Storrs, Connecticut at the University of Connecticut. She is a current student and writer at UConn, and she's got a piece today to share about growing up, making movies with friends, and realizing that we're not all in the same place. Take a listen to Cutting Room Floor.
The fire tower is almost black, backlit by the setting sun. It's the only smooth silhouette in acres of jagged forest, and it makes the horizon look like an unfinished puzzle, the tower an empty spot where somebody forgot to place the final piece of the reddening sky. It would be a good establishing shot if Miriam had brought the camera, but we aren't filming today. We reach the foot of the tower, or as close to it as we can with the fence in the way. We had considered bringing a ladder, but figured it was best to be as subtle as we could. That's why we came at sunset. I can climb while there's still light, and on the way out, it'll be dark enough that nobody will be able to get a good look at what we're carrying. I didn't bring gloves, so I'd be able to climb faster, but my fingers have turned as white as my breath. Pour me some cocoa, would you? We're supposed to be saving it for the victory celebration, but my lips are already stinging with the cold, and I doubt we'll want to hang around afterwards anyway. I shake my hands, trying to wring some feeling back into my fingers. Miriam shrugs off her backpack and pulls out the thermos. I lean against the fence and watch her pour, hoping the steam means that it's still hot. Miriam doesn't turn on the stove when her mother's not home, so it's the microwave kind, but heat is heat right now. "Do you think there's cameras?" Miriam asks, handing me the lid. "No way." I take a sip. It's too hot. Scalds my tongue. It's been out of use since my dad was a kid. I hand the lid back and forget to warn her. "Still, you'd think they'd want to guard their storage." Sip. "Shit, that's hot." I ignore her to assess the fence. It's easily climbable, chain link all the way up. The only danger is the barbed wire at the top. But as long as I'm careful, I should be able to swing my legs over one at a time. "It's pretty high," Miriam says. I look up. She's right. It's got to be 12 feet at least. I channel my inner slasher. I always play the slasher, and the slasher can't die because then we'd have to stop making sequels. "It's only chain link," I turn towards her. "And besides, you're not even climbing it, just keeping watch. What do you care?" Miriam shrugs. "I don't care." There's only a couple of minutes before the sun slips beneath the hill, which means I have to move fast. If there's not at least a little light for the way back, I'll have to do the entire climb by the beam of Miriam's flashlight. I shrug off my coat because it's puffy and cumbersome, and Mom would kill me if I ripped it on a barb. It's even colder than I thought, and there's a wind, pressing the chill into my exposed skin like Mom presses tinfoil leftovers into guests' hands at the end of the night. "And you're sure the smoke machine's up there?" I test the fence, pushing the toe of my boot into the gaps and pulling myself up. No good. They're too bulky. I'll have to do it in socks. I start taking my boots off, unlacing them halfway before tearing them off my feet. "I mean, where else would it be? It belongs to the fire department. My grandfather says that's how they do all their training." "I guess that makes sense." I start climbing. The metal is somehow colder than the air. "You know, this would be a perfect place to kill the prom queen." "Yeah." I hear Miriam stamp her feet and breathe into her hands. I told her to wear something warmer than that stupid knockoff Vertigo sweatshirt. But she starts in the school, so we'd have to film a chase sequence. Last time we filmed a chase sequence, Miriam shattered her phone screen and got grounded for a month, which put us way behind schedule. "You're right. Maybe for the next one." I'm up the fence now, and the barbed wire is much taller than I thought it was. I can still make it, I think, but it'll be hard. "You know, Jason asked me to the semi-formal next week," Miriam says. I laugh. Jason like from Friday the 13th? I swing one leg over. Pause to catch my balance. The wire brushes the inside of both my legs. Jason like the boy who sits next to us in algebra. He's the one that always gives us the homework answers. He's really nice. I hate algebra. It's the stupid stuff they teach kids who are going to grow up and go to college instead of becoming famous filmmakers. I swing the other leg over and a barb snags in my jeans. Damn. Those were my last unripped pair. He bought me a ticket and everything, Miriam continues, and those are like $45. Poor guy, I huff, my breath ragged from climbing. What? I'm clearly trying to focus on not getting shredded by the barbed wire right now, so it would be great if she could save the conversation for the walk home, but Miriam only likes it quiet when she's writing. Poor guy, I huff, louder. That's a lot of money to waste. Silence. Finally. I dismount the fence and come face to face with Miriam through the chain link. I grin and throw my hands up in the air like a gymnast who stuck the landing. I said yes, Miriam says. It takes me a second to process what she means. I thought we were going to film that night. We're supposed to get an awesome shot of everybody in their fancy dresses before the camera snaps to focus in the foreground, where I'm standing on the roof of the school looking down with a hatchet. I can't get that shot alone. The camera focus has to be manual. I thought we could maybe just, you know, actually go to the dance this time with our classmates. Oh. What? I shrug and start up the stairs, moving fast to keep ahead of the setting sun. I'm a little bit annoyed, but I don't want to be a bitch about it or anything. Miriam's allowed to have other friends. I'll get the shot alone. The students will just have to be out of focus. And besides, as long as we get the ending shot right, this will still be our best movie yet. I slaughter, like, 100 people at the school dance, and then I set the place on fire hunting down the prom queen. For a second, it seems like I might burn alive. But I never die. The killer has to escape to leave open the possibility for a sequel. This time, I'm going to emerge from the smoke. That's why we need the machine. I'm at the top of the tower now, and I can see the whole hill from here. The last beams of the evening sun saturate the dry grass until each blade drips gold, every stalk slick with the heavy light. It's not the kind of shot we'd take for one of our films. I take a minute to just look as the sun slips below our side of the world. Hurry up! An ant-sized version of Miriam calls from a million miles beneath me. It's getting dark. She's right. I turn to pull at the door. I've already moved on to thinking about what a smoke machine is supposed to look like when I see the padlock. Whereas everything else about the fire tower is rotting and old, the padlock is clearly new. I scream, and it echoes back at me from somewhere the sun hasn't set yet. What's wrong? Aunt Miriam calls. I punch the door over and over with my numb hands until they flare with pain. I can't waste any more time back here. I scramble down the fire tower steps in the fading light. It's almost completely dark by the time I get down to Miriam. Fucking padlocked, I say, as I hoist myself onto the fence. I mistimed it, and it's dark now. I can still see, but my field of vision is quickly decreasing. How are we supposed to set up a sequel without a smoke machine? Miriam doesn't say anything, just pulls out her flashlight to help me get over the barbs. I hear a click. And then a couple more clicks. Are you shitting me, Miriam? We've filmed enough scenes where a girl forgets to put batteries in her flashlight that I look around, half expecting somebody to jump out with a chainsaw. Why would you bring the one without batteries? Yeah, I brought the one that's out of batteries on purpose, Miriam snaps. I've been out to get you this whole time. Kind of fucking seems like it. I mean it mostly as a joke, but I'm angry enough that it doesn't sound like one, even to me. Whatever, Mir, it's whatever, I force myself to say, like it doesn't matter that we're not going to get the best ending shot of any of our movies. At least we found a good spot to shoot the next one. Miriam is quiet. What? I'm at the top of the fence now, one leg over the barbed wire. I peer down at her, trying to see if she's upset or just thinking. What? I ask again. Something's definitely the matter. I feel a little bad for ripping her so hard over the flashlight. I think this is my last film. I whip towards her and a barb snags my leg, a sharp, wet sting. I jerk without thinking, and suddenly I'm falling down, skin peeling back along the length of my thigh, hitting the ground hard. I can't breathe. Blood spreads from the cut, soft and warm. It doesn't hurt, not like my back. Miriam is already over me, screaming the kind of God-honest scream that we always try to replicate. Miriam, who doesn't want to skip any more school dances to film slashers. Miriam, who would probably skip anyways if I asked her to. Her vertigo sweater hangs off her shoulders and flaps in the wind like a white flag. Miriam, shut up. Look. What? I press my hand to my leg, then to my neck, letting the blood drip. Filmed at the right angle, it might look like I were dying. Get the shot. Miriam pulls out her phone, and I close my eyes. I try not to think about this being the last shot in the last film we'll ever make. Instead, I focus on dying properly. We'll get the actual scream in my closet, where nobody will hear us and the audio will be sharper. For now, I just open my mouth as wide as it can go, and lie there, and look at the darkening blue of the sky. Too early for stars, and too late for color.
Hello, Allison. Happy to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for coming back to Words Aloud.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. So I've got a lot of questions on this one. I'm super excited to dive into Cutting Room Floor. You know, when you sent it through and I read it, I already knew that there was so much I wanted to talk to you about because I felt so many things reading your piece. So first of all, let's start off with my favorite question. I always... Mm-hmm. Save the best for last just doesn't compute with me. Favorite question is always the first. What inspired this piece for you?
Yeah, so I've been working on a novel for the past like 3 years, and it's one of those projects that it feels like I'll never really finish. So the idea for this story came from a scene that I knew I needed to write for my novel that I was having just a really, really hard time hammering out. So I decided to write it from a totally different perspective in a universe outside the book to just kind of give myself a little freedom to see what works here and what doesn't work here without being too worried about whether it's in character or whether it flows into the chapters I need it to flow into. So it was really just an exercise to help myself nail down a particular beat that I knew I needed to hit in my novel, but I fell a little bit in love with it and I did wind up sending it off in a round of literary submissions.
I love it. It's when practice makes perfect the first time,
yeah,
and then it turns into its own piece, and I love it just as much as you do, so I can't even imagine how great it is sitting in the book. Is it sitting in the book? Did you decide to use it in the same scene that you were thinking about?
I did, but there's definitely a lot of edits that need to happen before it's novel ready.
All right, well, I'll be ready when it's novel
Thank
ready.
You.
So I think our listeners could probably agree that a piece like this, it's pretty universally applicable. There's a lot of themes of growing up, of seasons changing, and friends changing with that season of your life. So how have your experiences, and maybe do your experiences, get written into your piece in the same way with similar themes?
Yeah. This piece was definitely not a reach for me. I was very much the girl who wanted to film movies, metaphorically. And actually, in my case, I also literally did want to film movies. I had one of my good friends from high school come up and stay with me the other week, and she reminded me that when we were in high school, so we were probably 15 or 16 years old at this point, I had given her like a summer rehearsal schedule that stipulated she had to arrive like 2 hours early or something like that to my house so I could do a full face of old age makeup on her. So really, this piece was not a deep dig for me. But one of the really cool things about writing this story in retrospect is that I have the insight to know that, okay, my friends at the time were very, very interested in talking to boys and going on dates, where I was much more interested in writing scripts that involved cannibals. And we're still very good friends to this day. If I asked one of my friends in high school to be in some movie that I wrote tomorrow, I honestly believe that they'd do it. Yeah.
That's
super funny that you say that, because my next question for you was, who do you identify with more in this piece? And I think you totally nailed that on the head. But I do want to talk a little bit about the movie filming. And, you know, writing is not your only creative outlet out there. I know that. Can you tell us a little bit more about your other creative projects, maybe in particular the videos that you get to make and show off on YouTube?
Oh, yes. So when I was 17 years old, I started my YouTube channel that I run right now. And before that, I had another YouTube channel. And before that, another, dating all the way back till I was probably 11 years old. And it's a really rewarding experience for me to be able to make videos and share them online. And when I came to UConn, I started vlogging for the first time. And I connected with a community of people who were so supportive of me and, you know, really validated my efforts in getting through, you know, COVID semesters and kind of learning to live on my own for the first time. And so I love YouTube, and I'm super grateful for all of the opportunities that, you know, my YouTube channel has provided, including working for the UConn Communications Department and running their Instagram or posting videos to their TikTok and YouTube and all that. Yeah.
That is awesome. What a cool job to have as UConn student, being there and being able to contribute to that culture, that narrative of the place that you're attending and you're really living
in. It was super fun, yes.
How long were you doing that for?
I did that all last year, so two semesters, awesome. My sophomore year.
What was your favorite post? Do you have a favorite post that you ever made for either TikTok or Instagram? Or other, if you were managing other channels?
My YouTube move-in vlog was the one that I was most proud of, but my favorite one is they sent me to the dog therapy session, and I got to film a TikTok of the dog therapy, and I was... I mean, who doesn't want to be sent to dog therapy?
Right. If someone's going to send me to therapy, I would hope it's dog therapy. Exactly. Otherwise, I'm not going. But I have to say, when I was a student, I did attend one of the dog therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. I attended. There was like a dog meet and greet in the Benton. It was
super fun.
Oh, my goodness. They're just the best experiences, because when you're a student, you don't have access to pets. And, you know, you got Jonathan the Husky walking around campus, but he's on a schedule. He's a busy boy.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's nice when they do bring in dogs and it's like, here, just sit.
Oh, it's a super fun opportunity.
Pet the dog. That's it. Like, that's the goal, is just pet the dog. But I want to go back to the YouTubing a little bit, because I would think, and I don't have a YouTube and I haven't made vlogs, but I would think that there is crossover in the creative process between making vlogs and making content for like social channels and your personal writing, whether that's creative nonfiction or your novel or this snippet that we got today. Do you see any crossover when you're enduring either of those creative processes?
Yeah, so my YouTube channel is very action-oriented. So it's, here's what I did this week. Here's what's going on at UConn next month. And my writing, while fictional, is very emotion-oriented. So I'm feeling sad today. I'm feeling great today. So I think there is crossover in my writing style, just like how I go about sitting down and getting myself to produce content. But in terms of the content itself, I think my videos are more externally oriented and my writing is more internally oriented.
Right. And as far as muses go, or inspiration, because we take inspiration from our lives at that moment when we write. We take inspiration from our location. And obviously that informed your vlogging and talking about your college career. Are there any influences of people that you have had in your writing?
Oh, sure. This story could have been me and any one of my high school friends. Any one of my high school friends. I think I wrote this piece almost to my high school self, which felt really nice. Looking at this piece as an adult, or at least as somebody who's been removed from high school for a couple of years, you know that both of these girls are probably going to be okay. You know, both of these girls are going to grow into themselves, and maybe they'll stay friends, and maybe they won't, but they're both going to be okay. But I also wanted to pay respect to the fact that it doesn't feel like that in the moment, right? In the moment, it actually feels quite like you're dying. And in my novel, it's a much more dramatic scene. And since it's not a standalone piece, it's more important for me to emphasize the injury, which carries through the remainder of the novel. But here, I got to kind of let the girls off the hook a little bit and let the reader know, hey, you know, they're going to be okay, which felt really nice to write. And it was certainly true to my experience.
I think being able to almost write advice to yourself like that is one of the really cathartic experiences of writing. And it's one of my favorite pieces of writing, because when you're, you know, having a bad day, or when you're really going through a tough time in life and maybe not ready to open up to other people about it, it's really easy, or at least I think it's easy, to be able to pick up a piece of paper and just, or even my notes app. My notes app is scary. but even just being able to write out something in a creative way, and it's how you feel, and sometimes it's exactly the words that you need to hear, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah.
So I want to go back to location. Location, location, location.
Okay.
That's what the realtors say. But I want to talk about how being at UConn inspires you, and, you know, being surrounded by cows and cornfields. Like, is that much different from where you grew up, or how location informed your writing before college?
That's a great question. So I grew up in northern Massachusetts, so very, very northern Massachusetts, almost right on the border of New Hampshire. And it was suburban bordering on rural. And I feel like UConn is rural bordering on rural. It's very peaceful. And also, when I first got here, I did find it a little bit isolating. And so I think that absolutely has informed my writing, if not literally in the places that I put into my work, absolutely in the aspects of serenity and isolation that I put into my work.
Right. And when you were writing at home back in Massachusetts, and even before then, what would you tell your younger self, your younger Allison the writer self, about writing, about life, if you could, knowing all that you know and having written and created everything that you've created?
Oh, it's such a great question again. I think the biggest piece of advice I would have is write what's emotionally true to you, even if it's not situationally true to you. And so this scene from this story never happened in my real life. It's fiction. It's fake. But this breaking point in the relationship where one starts to realize that she doesn't understand the other one anymore is absolutely something that I think everyone experiences in middle and high school. And it's terribly sad. And that rings emotionally true for me. And so I think my advice would be, even if the scene is fake, the emotion has to be real for the story to be good or believable.
Right. Like, writing emotions that we don't feel ourselves is super difficult. There was one project that I tried to work on where a friend was telling me this story, and it had to do with like her favorite band and this crazy encounter she had with them. And I was just completely captured by this story. And I was like, dude, can I write this? Like, would it be an invasion of your privacy and like personal awareness if I were to write this story as a short story? And it failed for multiple reasons. One of them was because I'm not very good at writing short stories.
I don't believe
and,
that.
Oh, trust me. And then the other part was definitely because it wasn't my emotion.
Right.
It was something that was specific to her. It was something that I got excited by, and if she wrote it, I'm sure I would have gotten excited all over again. But because I wasn't able to experience an excitement to that caliber in in that kind of way, because of course there's exciting things that happen to me in my life. I'm not
right.
completely boring, but it wasn't that spontaneity, that, oh my goodness, this is straight out of a dream and there's no way this could possibly happen. And and that's why the story never came to fruition. And I'm glad it never came to fruition, right? Like, you think about those pieces that you may have started one day and then stopped for whatever reason or another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And trust me, there are a lot of stories that I'm glad I stopped writing. A lot of
I agree. Yeah, if it's not based in authentic emotion, I think there's no reason to write it.
100%. Because you're lying to yourself,
right.
you're pretending for your writer, and of course we pretend a lot because, like you said, you sometimes have to write a situation that wasn't yours.
Right.
But pretending emotion is so difficult, and I mean, you would think it's common sense, right? Like I can't pretend to be excited in this interview with you if I'm not actually excited. And I hope you can tell I am genuinely excited.
Thank you.
But it,
I mean, it seems like common sense, but I've tried it, right? Like, we've all tried writing stories with emotions that aren't ours, you know, for the flair, for a million different reasons. And I think we all have to kind of come to realize it's not working, or we don't have the passion to bring the project to fruition because we're play acting instead of, you know, expressing ourselves.
Totally. And
yeah,
one of the ways that I think writing can be really collaborative is being able to piggyback off someone else's emotion. Mm-hmm. And maybe if I were to write that story with that friend, it could have happened. And, you know, I haven't personally really taken on any projects that are true partnership projects like that. I don't know if you have any experience with that.
Oh, geez. I'm sure there's a million, but I can't think of it right now.
No,
I used to write songs with my brother.
Oh, really?
But he was much, much better at pretty much every aspect of music than me. So that partnership was short-lived, and I think he's going to have an illustrious solo career.
How much older is he? Was it like a...
No, he's actually younger. Oh, younger. Isn't that embarrassing that he's so much better than me and also younger?
No, that's okay.
He's 2 years younger.
Trust me, my sister is a prodigy at many, many, many more things than I am. She is...
It's always the
way. Also 2 years younger. I think it's a first child syndrome thing where it's like you think you're great at things and then you look at your younger sibling and you're like, huh, look at you out there in the world. Thank you for that. All right, well, I think we're just about at time, so I wanted to thank you so much again for coming on to the show. This has been a wonderful interview, and once again, reading Cutting Room Floor was a wonderful experience for me, and I hope it was for our listeners too.
Thank you so much. It was super fun.
Allison, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to all our listeners out there. Catch us next time on Words Aloud.
If you'd like to submit your work for an appearance on Words Aloud, you can send it to wordsaloudshow@gmail.com. That's WORDSALOUDSHOW @gmail.com. This show is produced with the support of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut.